Welcome, everyone, into the Mental Coaching Podcast, sponsored by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association. We have a great interview for you this evening. We are so excited to have the executive director of the National High School Basketball Coaches Association, Coach Dave Archer, is going to be joining us. Listen, with over 40 years of involvement with basketball, including high school and college coaching, most recently at Binghamton University in New York, he has led several organizations in giving resources and support and advocacy for our coaches across the country. He's the founder and executive director of the Basketball Coaches Association of New York. He's the founder and director of the New York State Basketball Coaches Clinic, the director of the New York State Basketball Hall of Fame. He's a board member of the National Basketball Coaches Association, the founder and executive director, again, of the National High School Basketball Coaches Association. He has also authored the textbook Beyond the X's and O's for Future Coaches. It's used by over 25 college universities, and it is a textbook that should be a guide for a lot of coaches in this day and age. We're going to talk a little bit about that. His philosophy is coaching that total person, not just a player, and genuinely caring about each and every person that steps on the floor for you. He's a member of the Seton Catholic Central High School Hall of Fame. He's a recipient of the Basketball Coaches Association of New York Service Award. He's also been the recipient of the National Pro-Am Achievement Award at Madison Square Garden. The Endicott Rotary Club Distinguished Service Award recipient and a recipient of the Douglas MacArthur Award for Service to Youth. And in 2012, he was inducted into the National High School Basketball Coaches Hall of Fame. And an incredible fun fact that I absolutely love, not only did he coach basketball and have teams and lead programs, but he also was mayor of Endicott, New York, and he took that on and led and coached an entire town and led them. And so a tremendous person who has a tremendous insight. We are bringing awareness to mental coaching and assisting coaches and athletes to better meet their hypothetical best. And we're so thrilled to have on the show with us tonight. And I want to welcome the executive director of the National High School Basketball Coaches Association, Coach Dave Archer. Well, I now want to welcome the executive director of the National High School Basketball Coaches Association, Coach Dave Archer. Welcome, Coach.
Glad to be here, Jenny. Very glad to be here.
We're so happy that you could take the time to talk about this important issue. I mean, being in charge of such a tremendous resource for mm-hmm. coaches across our country, it's really important that we have this, you know, conversation, and we continue to have this conversation as much as we can. And, you know, we're bringing some of that light and generating some conversation, if you will, over mental health of athletes, right? And I like to call it mental coaching, because we don't want to just recognize that they have a mental health issue. We want to talk about coping strategies and mechanisms that they can do in order to get through some of those and reach their, you know, hypothetical potential, if you will. So first thing, just your general thoughts about the mental health status of the high school players in our country.
I think that it's reached critical points in many different levels of scholastic athletes. I think that it was exacerbated by the COVID situation. And I'm really into the fact that we've gone off the rails with youth sports. And one of the rails that we've really jumped is, what does this do to kids? I've gone to, say, a high school, and I see a kid come out from practice, rip off his jersey, put on a lacrosse jersey, and then go to lacrosse practice. And I'm sitting there thinking, physically, what does this guy give? And mentally, what does this guy or girl give? So I've been, every place I look, I see it. And I'm of the, you know, started a long time ago in coaching where you were tough. A lot of the people that mm-hmm. Coached me and stuff, I mean, that was part of they served their time. And, you know, so it's different now, and that's good. But it's a different process. We used to worry about, do they have food? Do they have parents that care? Whereas now it's their physical health and their mental health. So there's a lot to it.
There is. And it's that total picture and that total package that we want. We don't want to just focus on their physical skills or their sports specific skills. We've got to put into play, you know, the mental skills and what you were just talking, the nutrition. Yes. We've got to take in that whole package. I think that's something that's so important.
Big time. All right. And I, as you would well agree to, the toughest thing we have to do is convince the parents that here's what should be happening, no matter whether you think this one-year-old is going to get a scholarship someday or not, isn't part of the package.
You know? Right. I think that is something that is, it's becoming more and more rampant, but I'm hoping conversations that we can start bringing some more awareness of the effects of what some of this pressure is putting on kids. You know, as a sports counselor, I see a lot of athletes and teams, you know, dealing with different mental roadblocks. So perfectionism, performance anxiety, fear of failure, inconsistent confidence, success guilt. That's a thing. You know, are you seeing this? I feel like perfectionism is probably the biggest roadblock that I see. What are you seeing with high school?
I see that. I have grandsons that played in youth sports, and then they went on in high school. They didn't play in college, but I watched it, you know, and I was like, this isn't right, because to be perfect, they had to be perfect for that AA youth coach. They had to be perfect for their scholastic coach, but mostly for the parent. The parent is the one that was putting this undue perfectionism on their kid, which of course, as you know, freezes you. It's like, I'm afraid to do anything now. Right. So yes, I definitely see it.
It's so true. And I feel like they don't, like they'll make a mistake and they look at it as a reflection on them as a human being, not just I made a mistake in a game. And it can be crippling for growth, because you can't get past that when you feel that it affects who you are as a person.
That's correct. Can't get past it.
And right.
You know, you talk about social media and how it affects people's social lives. Mm-hmm. It certainly affects their athletic life.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, the chatter that goes back and forth between two school teams that are going to be playing each other, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not healthy.
It's not. And I know that at the college level and the professional level, you know, there's a lot of people that say, oh, well, you know, they need to be able to handle that. And I don't really agree with that either, because who are you to judge these athletes, right. Number one. But number two, high school kids, when it occurs to high school kids where they're getting, you know, hazed on social media, or they are internally comparing themselves to someone else and don't feel like they're up to that expectation, that's something that it scares me how much that can affect them.
Rightfully so. And I forget some of the states that were mentioning that they're going to try and not let people have social media or anything until they're 12 years old. I don't know how they'll ever enforce that.
Right.
Yeah, it is very, very harmful.
It is. It's difficult. And, you know, and then you have, you look at your parents' social media, and oftentimes you see this, the highlight of your child, and you're building them up. This is what my child is. My child did this, did that, which is great. Celebrate those moments. There's nothing wrong with celebrating those moments, but be mindful of what that, you know, generates in their mind as well. I need to be on mom's highlight reel. That's not a conscious thought, but it sure can be a subconscious thought.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I see, like where I teach, I was in a department meeting. One woman said, well, I'm going to be out Thursday and Friday. And I said, well, where are you going? And she said, well, we're going to Orlando. I said, well, oh, really? For what? A junior high girls soccer tournament. I said, oh, she goes, yeah, we're hoping. Scholarship, we're hoping. The kid's in seventh grade.
Oh, my goodness.
You know? I'm thinking, so that kid's going to go out there, and when they come off, what's the parent going to say? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you kick? Why did, you know?
Yeah.
Not
How many
good.
Goals did you have? How many? Yes. You've got to be careful. And parents, it's a fine line, because, you know, my father was a professional athlete. He played in the NFL. I had uncles that also played professionally. I mean, sports was a big part of our family. I don't ever remember my dad ever, you know, judging. Now, I'd ask him and he'd give me his opinion, but the conversation was always, you know, did you try your best? Were you a good teammate? And did you respect the game? Those were the three things he always asked me. And, you know, and then I'd say, I want help with my shot. I want to help. And then he would help me. But you've got to lay the platform of unconditional love and unconditional pride. first.
That's a great comment. Great comment.
I think, and it's not easy. Let's validate that. It's not easy. It's an emotional role being a parent of an athlete.
Yep.
It is. You want the best for them. Nobody's going to judge you for wanting the best. But
no, but you sure fired. Hope the parents next to you don't hope it for their kid more than for your kid.
Right. 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 All right. So as executive director of the Coaches Association in New York for basketball, that is something you are the founder of yes. this association. Yep. And when you developed this, you were asked one time, there was an article on Press Connects that you were asked about kind of the mission. And you talked a little bit of in a snippet of it was we want to help coaches develop and we want to be advocates for coaches. Mm-hmm. And yep. I know there's a lot more to it, but those two statements really stood out to me. So how can we help coaches develop tools to help athletes? Because they're not all trained in counseling services or therapeutic techniques. What can we do to help some of those coaches?
I think that right now, the national and each state, we're trying to get an effort for that next generation of coaches to get an awful lot of younger people that are saying, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to deal with those parents, et cetera. So we need to prepare them and train them. And I think one of the major things we can deal with is coaches have that unique opportunity to positively affect student athletes more than anybody except their family. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something we can nurture. And you get down to, well, why do you coach this way? Well, that's the way I was coached. But we need to have that new model that it's okay to say, how do you feel today? You know, and they say it was crappy or whatever. You don't then make them run laps, you know, but you've got a new, I don't want to say soft skills because they're hard skills, but we teach them, you know. I think that's what we've got to do. We've got to teach them.
That is so true. Well, speaking of teaching, you authored a book that was called Beyond the X's and O's, and it's mm-hmm. a college textbook for future coaches. Yep. So tell me a little bit about, you know, the contents of this book. How can it help them grow in that area? Because I love the title, by the way. Beyond the X's and O's.
Yes. Yes. Which was unheard of back when I wrote it. You know, right. Everything was, how do you beat this zone or basketball wise, you know? And so I wanted to get to the real part of being a coach, you know, what does the human being do that makes them a coach? And so I dealt with, you know, how to deal with parents, how to do this, you know, all the things, how do you coach the kid academically and all the things that wouldn't take place on a basketball court or the football field or whatever. And I used coaches that I knew as examples of what not to do, you know. So I never named
them.
Did you
change the names?
I never put the name, but I'm always wondered, did they go through it and see, oh my God, that looks like me, you know, or acts like me. Because I think it used to be like, even now, we need a seventh grade coach. Okay, will you do it? No. Will you do it? No. I'm not good. Okay, well, come on anyway. You know, we just need a body. And then there's no training.
Right.
So that's what Beyond the X's and O's. And at that time, soon after that, I started coaching in college. And a lot of my friends were teachers at college. So they'd started to use it. And then it became like a textbook in many places, from Duke on down.
I think that's it's a huge resource. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to gravitate towards that because if anything, even if it's not a course that they take in college, maybe it's, you know, it's a development program that state associations require and they use it as a guide.
Yes.
I'm going to take over. I'm going to be your publicist now.
All right. Perfect.
I think it's something that is really important because again, you can't have enough tools in your toolbox. I think that's important. And you were talking about different types of coaches. So let me ask you this. You know, when I think about, you know, a successful coach, again, it's that total picture, right? The ones that are my way or the highway are just, they don't have any longevity anymore in this day and age.
No. That used to be what you wanted.
Right. Right. And you were, again, I'm going to quote you from an article that I was reading that you kind of asked what makes a successful coach. And something that stood out to me was the most important thing is to truly, truly care. You can't fake that you care. It's the second most important part of giving them time to talk about what it is that their future and where I'm at now. I mean, giving them that opportunity. Kids are smart. They can see through when you are not genuine. And I love that statement.
I don't know how I came across it, but it's how I live. I mean, I teach college kids now, and I get that note when they're graduating, you cared. I know that you cared. You know, it's a skill you can develop, but it is crucial because we're all dealing with development.
Yeah, we are. And it's so hard. And believe me, just like we were validating with parents, let's go ahead and validate for coaches that sometimes it's not easy. There are high maintenance players out there.
Yes.
But you have to find a way that differentiated instruction, differentiated motivation is a thing too. You find what motivates them.
That's a great comment.
Yeah, find a way that motivates them. I think that's so important. But you know, what are some ways that a coach can show that they care?
I think they have to show, and it's easy to do, that they care about the person, not the athletic skill. Mm-hmm. You know, what did you do this weekend that wasn't related to athletics? How are you doing in each course? And look them in the eye and comment back, but them as a person, not the athlete. Then when you start practice, or if you just finish practice, that's different. But whether you put a circle of your players at the end or before you start, not just 1, 2, 3, go whatever school it is, but you know, you really talk to them, you know? You're worried about this smog from Canada now? And they'll say something and be like, oh, my dad, da-da, and then you start to see who they are.
Right. And that it opens up a whole new door, and it makes you more approachable as well. I think that humanizes coaches.
Yes. Yes, which is, you say it makes it more approachable and accessible. Then you have to be careful how often, you know. It's like,
true.
Well, you start because you always go in and talk to them, you know. No.
So yeah.
There's just a lot to manage, but it's human beings. And that's what's so exciting.
Well, and I think one of the things too, that, you know, there are your starters and you have your role players, and caring about each one of them. I mean, it's one thing to just be nice to everybody on your team, but to be able to make that extra effort to make them feel valued, that they are a contributor, no matter if it's 1 minute or if they play half the game or if they play all the game, that they feel valued and they contribute. That is a huge key, I think, to being, you know, a great coach. I was going to say a great mental coach, but great coach.
Yeah, the value, that they feel valued as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what they can get out of that experience. And, you know, I think that's what we would want for our own kids. And
absolutely.
So I think when coaches are, you know, when they are parents, I do think that gives them a little bit elevated perspective. As that, did you find that when you started to have children that you became a better coach because of your perspective?
Yes. Even when they were preschool, you know, they're just little babies, etc. You know, yes, very much so. Because then when they started in school, then you knew more problems and you knew more situations that kids face.
Right. Definitely. That is so true. It makes it a little bit more relatable as well when you
absolutely
going through that. So you know, talking about perfectionism and some of these mental roadblocks, I was reading this article the other day, Chin-Chin, Key and Tai from 2008. And even though it's an older article, it rings so true. Sadly, it rings very true still today. And they talked about the experience of burnout. And how it negatively affects both the physical, psychological health, and that athletes that are getting burnout are often defined with that perfectionism mentality, if you will. And so as high school coaches, you know, we're trying to get them ready for that next level for college and get them prepared if that's where they're going and that's their path, you know. But how do we take away the burnout feeling of this, you know, this perfectionism that is causing it?
And specifically in basketball, which is the sport I pay the most attention to, we need to have less coaches and less activities. So that if you're a basketball player in a school, in the springtime, play something else, do something else. And the same thing with the fall. Then you become well-rounded. Maybe you're not a good baseball player, but you're a role player. In basketball, you're a star. I think if you don't let them get run down mentally or physically, they're gonna thrive, you know. But what I see now are the college students I have. I'll say, how many of you were on a sports team in high school, grade school, junior high, high school? Why? I was tired. I was burned out. I knew I wasn't going to play. I was going to get in the band in college, you know. So it just,
right.
Yeah, but weren't you playing for fun? Weren't you playing to be with your friends, to represent your school, or were you playing for the scholarship? So.
So true. So true. And I am a huge fan of multi-sport athletes. And if you ask, you know, college coaches, I sent out a survey once when I was doing a series on multi-sport athletes, and I had athletic trainers that came in and talked about, you know, the injury prevention and using different muscles and all of, you know, the different training techniques. But I surveyed 100 coaches, you know, 98% came back that they would rather recruit a multi-sport athlete. The two coaches that said no, they want them to specialize, had been coaching 1 year and 2 years.
Yep.
So that might tell you something.
Sure does.
You know, it's such a great brain break for them, as you said. It makes them more fresh for their season.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have time to be a human.
Wouldn't that be nice? That is good. Yes.
Very nice.
So, you know, as a leader and an educator of coaches, you are looked at as a mentor across the country for a lot of coaches, and you're a go-to for them. So we need to shape this mold a little bit differently in the future. So as far as coaches are concerned, I think they are the absolute worst at taking care of themselves.
Yes.
And I don't think you can help athletes until you help yourself. So I'm going to ask you to kind of put yourself out there just a little bit. You know, you have a lot going on, you know, your introduction. We talked a lot about what your responsibilities are and what you're involved in. Plus you have, you know, a beautiful family that you are very involved with. So how do you find balance? What do you do in your times of when you get a little overwhelmed?
Faith is one. That's probably number one.
Sure.
And then along the way, I learned more about meditation and mindfulness and taking those quick mental breaks. And I just think, I mean, I grew up a long time ago and my brother was a three sport, you know, and I think that's the way you do it, you know. And then I get so busy with, well, you got the fall clinics, you've got this, you've got that, you're teaching and so on. And then you would walk through the door coming home and see your kids. It was like, perfect. You know, that's, you drop everything and you become a different person. Mm-hmm. So when I get, you know, overwhelmed, it becomes faith, meditation, and pay attention. The more attention I paid for my kids at that time, the calmer I got.
Isn't that amazing? They are the best therapy ever.
Yes, it is. It is.
You know, and grandkids are probably even better.
Yeah, because they leave. You know?
Yeah. So. That's so true. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I'm a big fan of meditation. I practice transcendental meditation and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the word mindful. You use the word mindful, and that is, you know, taking care is about paying attention to how you're taking care.
Yes.
Expand on that for me.
I do a lot in my academic teaching about, how many of you were good in math in high school? You know, hands go down. I said, how do you know? Well, I you know, I just knew. And then we head into how do you set goals, et cetera. And then your mindfulness, and it becomes the growth mindset instead of the stagnant mindset. And it begins to affect everything you do, you know, the way you walk, the way you talk. So when I do that, even now with college students, I see the results almost immediately. You know, it's like, yes, you're right. You know, so I think when you can clear their brains and get them to think about what it is and how does a piece of paper feel and how does that person talk, everything begins to fit. You know?
I do think that makes a big difference, and good for you taking that to the classroom and helping those students.
Mm-hmm.
got to be, that's a great tool for self-awareness. And when you get more self-awareness, you get more self-confidence, more self-efficacy.
Yep.
A lot of things can happen.
You do. And it's still old school, but it works. You stand at the door as they come in. How are you today? Yes. You can tell.
Right.
You can tell. How are they carrying their backpack? What's the look on their face? You know?
Do they even speak back sometimes? You know, sometimes they look at you and engage and
yes.
Want to get to their
thanks for asking. Other times it's like, what'd you say?
Boom, yeah. You talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh,
so I just, if once you get them to get in and understand them as people, it makes it so easy.
It does. And yeah. It's that simple. It's that simple to feel valued and treat them as people.
Absolutely.
Well, I know a coach that does that. I've gotten to do a little bit of homework on your son, Coach David Archer at Cornell football. I was looking at some of his bio. Now, I want to read a little snippet from his bio. Okay. He was described as an innovator who has provided steadfast leadership while making education his mission on the field, in the classroom, and in life away from Cornell. Coach Archer brings an infectious passion and detailed and organized plan for the future of Big Red football program. And you spend 5 minutes with him listening to him talk about the educational mission of the university and how football fits into it. You're ready to suit up. I can't think of a bigger compliment for an institution to give a coach.
It is really, that's him. What you see is what you get. He's a smart coach. But he also is like the guru on campus for diversity, equity, and inclusion, deliberately hiring minority coaches and recruiting minority students. And he's also on the county mental health, I forget the name of it, county mental health something that tries to raise funds, promote awareness about mental health in the county, you know, but he just does it, you know. But he's enthusiastic, you know.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I want you to continue, but I wanted to say, I think he probably got that from somewhere.
Yeah, he did.
He paid attention.
Any of my children, I said, don't stand on the sidelines. Get involved.
Yeah.
And he realized, you know, this isn't a very diverse campus. Let's do something. And rather than complain, he got the people together and took them to lunch and brought them to a game, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, start stuff. Yeah.
And that to me, that's another avenue for your mental health is not just talk the talk, but walk the walk.
Yes.
Walking the walk and putting action into your words can be so empowering.
Yes.
And it's just impressive. I mean, I would love for my son to play for a man like that.
Absolutely.
His abilities up, but
absolutely.
I just think that's something that you want to look for. You know, they talked a lot about his accolades, coaching, those are the statements that stood out to me. If I was a parent of a recruit and I read that, I'm like, I want my son playing for someone like that.
No question about it. No question. So, you know, it's within the Ivy League, it's hard to recruit because you have Harvard, Princeton, and Yale that have more resources than the rest of them. But he rarely loses the recruiting battle to anybody if he really wants that kid.
That is incredible. So what is his philosophy to, I mean, this seems to be like he doesn't coaching is not a job. It's a lifestyle for him.
Right.
Why do you think, because there's a lot of football coaches that are show no weakness. You must perform. You must produce. Are you worth nothing? You know, not that that's not really how they feel. That was a little bit of an exaggeration.
No, that fits a lot of people.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah.
How has he been so successful with this different mentality? It really is a different mentality. And there's a lot of coaches that I know will share that similar mentality, but putting the person before the player.
It started slow. And then once the kids, players knew how much he cared, the battle was won. So much so that one of the students on campus every year serves on the board of trustees. And 1 year recently, there was a football player. And they said, tell us about coach. well, his stock went up, and then that spreads the message to more people. But yeah, once they knew how much he cared, yeah, he'd drive on campus, he'll roll down his window and pull over and say, "Hey, how you doing?" You know, to the players.
Right.
Not just, so they're not just helmet heads, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's a, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important too, to be able to recognize that, you know, he cares about them as a person. I think that's wonderful, because a lot of head coaches, I mean, they have a large coaching staff, and a lot of times they staff that out. I know that sounds funny, but a lot of times they will, they'll staff that out. Go check on so-and-so, check on, you know, check on your backs, check on the line, check on the head coach doing it.
You got hurt in the game today. They took you to the hospital. Go, you take the bus. Everyone go on the bus on home. I'm going to stay here with Joe or whatever it is. But yeah, he doesn't farm that out. And he's got 120 players on his team, you know, so.
Incredible. That's incredible. Well, you tell him I'm a fan.
I will. I will.
And then keep that. Keep it up. Keep it up.
All right. I will.
Yes. Okay. So at the end of this podcast, I always try and give kind of a technique of the month, if you will, or, you know, a technique for this podcast. Do you have any techniques? I kind of like the meditation. Do you have a certain technique in meditation? Do you use an app? Do you use music? Do you sit quietly? What's your meditation?
Mine mainly is sit quietly, because I can do it at my desk, you know. That's mainly it. I do listen to some calm music at times, or my wife is really big into remedial yoga or something for her back, and she comes home with all these, look at this, or try this one, how about that one? So I do. So it's because you get moments, you know. You don't get time, you get moments where you could do something, and that's usually enough to de-stress you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so important. It really is. And I think that, you know, taking those moments, it may just be a few minutes of the day, but it enhances all of the other minutes.
No question.
Yeah.
No question. Mm-hmm. I mean, you come back from teaching or coaching or whatever, and you sit down, but boy, this is not good. And if you do the right 5 minutes later, you're pretty happy where you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so I want to wrap with this question. I probably should ask this at the very beginning, but I know where Coach Archer from Cornell got his inspiration, but your concepts of coaching the total player and paying attention to them and caring, you've been ahead of your time during your career. Who was your inspiration to help kind of guide you through that philosophy?
Bits and pieces of basketball coaches that I saw or observed, but I say bits and pieces because they weren't always doing the right thing, you know. Like, so mainly it was looking that there was a lack of, and I was going to fill that gap, you know. It's like I don't see people caring as much, or, you know, all they talk about is how the ball gets dribbled, and I thought, I'll try and change it. So. So far, so good.
And they were receptive. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You've been described as a magnet for a lot of people. They gravitate toward you, and they want your opinion. I can't think again of a higher compliment. I mean, that is a pretty wonderful compliment for your peers to say.
It is. And I value that. I had one, you know, you're as long as I have, you get those and they add up and stuff. I had one this year, where a young man called me. He had graduated 5 years ago from college. And I had his, at the school I teach at, I had he and his wife at different classes, you know. But he said, you had the most profound effect on this person I'm going to marry. So much so, we would like you to officiate the wedding. I know. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know?
I love
said, that. Oh, I am so honored. When is it? It's the same dates we're going to be in Portland, Maine. So I can't do it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But that, what an honor to even be asked to do that.
Yes. Yes. And I know it was a low point when I had the girl as a student, you know, and she was having some stress and so on, and we worked through it. And but that's one of those that just, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we were wondering if you would, I thought, attend the wedding, but officiate.
Officiate. Not will you come to the wedding, but will you actually officiate it?
So.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm. Well, I am going to be bold, and I'm going to speak for your players and your assistant coaches and your peers in the Coaches Association. You're also on the National Basketball Coaches Board. I mean, you have a hand in the entire country in helping coaches, and from your peers and your players, your assistant coaches, your students in the classroom. I thank you for your philosophy, and I thank you for your attitude, and I thank you for the impact that you've made on so many.
Thank you. Thank you. That's nice of you to say.
No pressure. Keep it up.
Okay. I'll try.
Well, I appreciate it. We've been visiting with Coach Dave Archer, and we are going to continue with our technique of the month. We'll be back in just a quick moment. So for our technique of the month, I want to talk a little bit about mindfulness and meditation. A lot of times when a pre-performance technique is needed to calm nerves or to calm anxiety or just even for clarity, there's a lot of things going inside your head that create stress and pressure, and being able to calm those waves, if you will, and being able to take some time, and this may be 4 hours, 5 hours before performance. It's also great for reflection after performance. So meditation, let's focus on that one for this episode. And meditation comes in all shapes and sizes. There are different ways. I don't know that there is actually a wrong way to meditate. The key is finding what works for you, the individualized method that works best for you and clears your mind. I personally practice transcendental meditation, and I have enjoyed learning that process of TM and the benefits of that. But there might be a meditation that you find that works for you. And that's the key, is to personalize the technique. But being able to, you know, a few hours before competition, to be able to listen to music and just be in a quiet space. Maybe you have the Calm app that has meditation. There are lots of different apps out there besides that one that have meditation sessions. And I highly recommend you check those out, because being able to spend 10 minutes, 15, 20, just being present and just calming your mind can do a world of difference. And by the way, this isn't just for athletes. This is for everyone. If you can take the time out and have that meditation and find what works for you, that is one of the most ultimate techniques for life. I want to thank the National High School Basketball Coaches Association Executive Director Dave Archer for joining us in this episode. I am grateful also for the National High School Basketball Coaches Association for sponsoring this podcast. We'll be back with another episode soon. If you have any ideas for this podcast or want to make a suggestion for a coach to be interviewed, you can email at acoachesperspective@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening. Best of luck, and don't forget to hold your follow through.